Well, hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us for Deer Talk Now. I'm your host, Dan Schmidt, and I want to thank everybody who's made this podcast successful. Thank you very much. This is episode number 38 for this year, and we very much appreciate all the support everywhere this podcast is being dropped, audio, video, wherever you're consuming it. All we ask you to do is like it, share it, and comment where possible. And then rank it, like give us your true ranking wherever you're listening to this podcast. We very much appreciate it. It helps us bring you more of these podcasts for free. Yes, we do have advertisers. We try to keep those inclusions to a minimum, but they help bring these to you every week. So today, the other one that we just dropped about a week or two ago, I kind of went off on a rant, and I like going off on my rants because I get the feedback from you guys, and I want the feedback from you on all of them. But when I'm passionate about it, it helps the day go by quicker, and it helps the podcast go by quicker, and I understand that people enjoy it more. Today is I'm going to call this in my top five of all things that when I am done working in this industry, again, I hate that term, but when I am done working in the deer world, I would hope people understand several things. They're better hunters by shot placement. They're safer hunters by tree stand safety. They know a little bit more about deer biology, behavior research, and management. And one of the things, I don't know why this is, it sticks with me for a long time because I guess people don't read as much anymore, especially scientific literature, when it's brought to the masses. And I think we've done a great job here at Deer and Deer Hunting doing that over all these years, even way before I was here. But this one, it's something that triggers me when I see it on social media. Not in a bad way. It's just I want people to know the truth. And it's about, as you can tell from the headline, it's about so-called antler does. So if you don't have the patience to listen to this whole podcast, just take this home with you. Please tuck this in your hat and remember it. And I'm going to use a corny little example. Do you guys remember the Here Comes the King song from Budweiser? The University of Wisconsin band adopted. It kind of goes, da-na-na-na. And then they say, when you say Wisconsin, you said it wrong. Well, this one is, when you say it's an antler doe, you're probably wrong. Because that's the way I want you to remember it. If you see a picture on social media and the person is holding up a deer and it's velvet deer with branch antlers, you know, a 4-pointer, or a 6-pointer, or 8-pointer, a 10-pointer, some massive trophy, and they say, and it could even not possibly have, it might not even have velvet antlers. It might have hardened antlers. If it has hardened antlers at all, and it's branch antlered, and you see it, and somebody calls it an antler doe, technically it's not an antler doe. It's not a true female, and that's what I want to get to today. It's actually more special than that. So it's not a negative. When I go on there, people think, oh, why are you raining on this guy's parade? He's just showing up. I'm not raining on the parade. I'm just trying to tell you what we know through scientific research. I don't want that to be lost in the wash, so to speak. If you see a deer with branch antlers and somebody's calling it an antler doe, it's probably way weirder than that, and it's some type of hermaphrodite. And I'm going to get to that in a moment, and it could be something other than that. So I'm going to explain all that. So despite all this research that we know that's been going on for years, we've published this stuff for more than 25 years, the general deer hunting public is still confused that from the outward signs of somebody calling a deer an antler doe, they really don't understand what it is. More specifically, our research editor, John Ozoga, who has written for us since 1989, he was a contributing editor since 1994. He's retired. John's 84 now. He lives up in the UP of Michigan. But he was one of the, I'm going to say, the key person who helped popularize scientific literature. Because if you look at a scientific paper in the Journal of Wildlife Management or, you know, the Harvard Medical School or some places, you look at that stuff and say, I don't know what they're saying here because it's medical research. And researchers can understand it, but the average person, myself included, we can't. So John would, I'd say, dumb it down enough so we could understand what they did in research over the past 50 plus years and how it applies to Dear Biology, Behavior, and Research. And that's those are the tenets that we founded this magazine on and our television show and all the media that you consume from us. That the underlying backbone for deer and deer hunting is practical and scientific-based information for white-tailed deer hunters and enthusiasts. Because the more you know about the deer, the better hunter you're going to be, the more informed you're going to be. So when we get to that, we talk about, like I said, long story short, if you see branch antlers, it's probably not a doe by the true definition of a doe. And why is that, you're going to say? Well, there's four reasons why, and then I'm going to get to also what these break down to as far as classes. So the first thing we published, I believe, was called The Mystery of Antler Does, and here were the takeaways from that piece. To accurately judge the reproductive status of a whitetail that's presumed to be an antler doe, it's necessary to examine its reproductive tract. So somebody says, well, I can see that it's got girl parts when I open up its legs and I'm going to go field dress it. That's not its reproductive tract. Its reproductive tract, you'd actually have to do an autopsy on that deer. And that's something that the average person certainly can't do, and actually a biologist can't do unless they're actually in a controlled environment. John did hundreds of autopsies on deer, and they did fascinating stuff. They actually did fetal weights of tiny, tiny fetuses, and they could actually calculate conception dates. They did stuff like that. That most of that information today, it's out there, but people just, like I said, they don't read. But this stuff was precision. So the other thing, let me stop there before I go off on that topic. I'll bring that back in here a second. The mere presence of those organs doesn't mean that it's a true female. Even then, it might be difficult to tell what type of intersexuality it would have. So if it is a pseudohermaphrodite, which you're probably guessing, if you see that deer with branch antlers and you're calling it an antler doe, but now you're saying, well, Dan told me if it has branch antlers and hardened antlers whatsoever, it's not an antler doe. It's probably a hermaphrodite. In those cases, I'm going to say almost 10 times out of 10, you have a situation where that deer has its uterus, its tubes, its ovaries were either missing, deformed, or diseased. And that's something, like I said, the average person cannot determine. Another one, which would be a small percentage of our, what they call cryptorchid males, and you see this in other animals. The scientists will prefer that term, cryptorchid, over the more accurate pseudohermaphrodite, which describes a deer that has female type external sex organs down there, but with undescended testes buried in body fat, which again is something that the average person's not going to decide. So the guy's going to say, well, I didn't see any, well, forgive me for the term, but well, it didn't have any balls on it. No, of course not. They were probably so tiny and undescended within the side of that deer, you never saw it. It came out when you field dressed it with the inside the fat, and you didn't know. So those are some of the things that we as hunters will never see. And are you going to take your deer to some, good luck today with the way budget cuts are. States have cut all their biologists. I don't even think you'd get anybody to look at it, but there's a chance maybe some in some places where you'd either get a, you know, somebody who's fascinated, a veterinarian or a biology researcher or something who actually might like to take a look at it and learn more about it. I wish the science community had more resources to do this type of thing, because we could find out more about the preponderance of these situations, and we could also find out, you know, these individuals' roles in the deer herd, which I find fascinating. The other thing, the third thing, which is more accurate to determine if you have a true antler doe, would it be the growth of pedicles and antlers, which depend on the elevation and the secretion of testosterone. Now, scientists know that in the ovaries of like rats and mice and other mammals, they will produce amounts of a male hormone, testosterone. that might sometimes in deer trigger antler growth. And you're going to say, well, how can that be? Well, we do know that there will be levels of testosterone that will affect females sometimes. But herein lies the rub. The no pun intended, the antlers of a true antler doe that might have had that exposure to testosterone, they're never branch antlered, and they don't harden. So normally with a true antler doe, you just see blobs of antler. It's like blobs of velvet that just keep growing and growing and growing. It doesn't fall off because they are not male, and they don't produce that testosterone that's needed to increase and decrease for the antlers to fall off. In a true antler doe, you will see blobs of, like I said, velvet headgear that in northern states, normally in wintertime, they'll freeze and fall off, or parts of it will fall off, and it's just kind of grotesque looking. It's not the same as a cactus buck. That's a different subject for another day that I won't get into, but it's not the same thing. The velvet blobs sometimes will be partially hardened, but they will adorn that deer, like I said, for it the duration of its life, unless it freezes and falls off, and that deer will be of a normal size. So it will be of like a normal size doe. You're not going to find a 250-pound doe. If you see this monster, what we call a slobber knocker, deer with headgear and girl parts, it's a hermaphrodite of some sort. And the really other fascinating one is the preponderance of free martens and whitetails. This is another rabbit hole that we can go down. But what happens with these, I'm going to explain it in a little bit. That's when you have twins in utero and you have a male and a female. And the characteristics of those twin ungulates are affected. And the female is normally affected and the male is not. The other fascinating thing about that is that happens in elk and moose, but it's extraordinarily rare to see what we see in whitetails. And again, like I said, the preponderance of whitetail does that have what we say, you know, that are antlered does.
Matt!
Okay, we're going to take a quick break to thank one of our sponsors. Today's episode of Deer Talk Now podcast is brought to you by Muddy Outdoors and the new Merge Cellular Trail Camera. Featuring simple, easy-to-use cellular activation with quick-scan QR setup, the Merge Cell Cam features 26 megapixels, updated ultra-fast trigger speeds, 4 image resolutions, 80-foot detection and IR range, burst mode, and an SD card slot that takes up to 32 gigabyte cards. It operates on 8 AA batteries and has an external power jack for solar battery pack that's sold separately. Check them out at your local sporting goods retailer or visit GoMuddy.com. Where does all this information come from? Am I just a walking encyclopedia? Well, kind of sorts, because I've worked here for so long. But this research dates back in stages over 50 years, but it comes from around the world. And that's what I would encourage anyone who is fascinated just in learning more about this topic. Go to our website, go to deerandeerhunting.com, just type in the search button, just type in antler does Dan Schmidt. My blog post will come up and give you a lot of this information. But the stuff that John compiled was the work of, I'm going to say, at least a dozen, if not 15 researchers over the course of, I'm going to say, you know, the 1950s all the way up until current, probably the late 90s. I don't know of any modern current research being done on it, and I wish there was, because I think with today's, you know, DNA technology and all the stuff that we have now, I think we could learn more about this. But I'm going to give shout outs to seven if you include John and George Wislocki, who I already noted. But if you look at the pedigrees of these gentlemen, most of them are no longer with us. It's amazing what they learned because they were researchers first and foremost. The first one was George Wislocki, Harvard Medical School. The second and third was a father and son. It was Dr. Anthony Bubinick, who was a renowned ungulate researcher from Europe, and his son, George Bubinick. George was way ahead of his time. In the 1950s, he actually got booted out of one of the places where he was working because he would not kowtow to the politics, because they were saying, we want you, and you see that today, don't you? We want you to take this research and bend it to our political agendas. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm a researcher. I'm here to research various topics. And he was one of the foremost researchers on deer. His work was published in the European Journal of Wildlife Research, and he was also a faculty member of the School of Medicine at Charles University. His work was just stellar. Then you had J.C. Donaldson at the Department of Anatomy at the University of Pittsburgh. You had Richard Goss from Brown University, and you had W.T. Heselton from Johns Hopkins University. All these men basically spent their careers studying, in large part, deer and how they function and, you know, what they made up. So we have to give shout outs to them. So where do we go from there? To wrap this up nice and neat, I'm just going to give you the categories. So if you see a picture of what somebody's calling an antlered deer in your head, try to remember these four categories. It's probably one of these four. And I'm going to give away number four. Number four is a true antlered doe, and that's going to be last. Okay, number one, it's probably a hermaphrodite. A true hermaphrodite has both male and female internal sex organs, ovaries and testes. Will you be able to find both of them? No, you will not. However, there are numerous combinations concerning the makeup of the sex organs and their locations within the body, which makes it more complicated. Outwardly, it's possible for a hermaphrodite deer to have either male or female external organs down there in between the legs. Alternatively, the animal may simultaneously possess both male and female external organs, which I think would freak anybody out. You shoot that deer, it's got antlers, and you roll it over, and it's like, holy boat, wow. You know, it's, yeah, so party on, Garth. I don't know exactly what we're going to call this thing. Number two, it's a pseudo-hermaphrodite, otherwise known as a cryptorchid male. So the term pseudo-hermaphrodite illustrates an intersex connection in which the sex organs are anatomically incorrect. With this disorder, a deer may possess the internal reproductive organs of one sex. So it might have internal testes or it might have internal ovaries, but the external genitalia that resembles the opposite sex. So it could have, like, let's just say, internal testes and an external vagina, or external testes and an internal ovaries. It could be a combination. The extent determines the characteristic in an individual. The extent of any of those determining characteristics in an individual deer can vary. So that's what makes it really complicated. You're not probably going to be able to answer it. All you're going to be able to do is say, that's a hermaphrodite. So that's way more unique. I think I said this in the beginning of the program. That's way more unique than saying it's an antler doe, because you know that it's not a true antler doe. The third category, which this one, again, take yourself down some rabbit holes and learn some biology and impress your family and friends. But this is called a free marten. And like I said, this is known in the cattle industry. In deer, they postulate, again, that this could be a third category for what we call antler does. So what we know with cattle is that an infertile female calf can be masculinized, it can have masculinized behavior and functioning ovaries, which is bizarre. The animal appears to be female, like I said, kind of the same thing with what you think is an antler doe, but various aspects of the reproductive department are altered due to the acquisition of hormones from, get this, its male twin in the womb, in utero. So with whitetails, we know that whitetails often have twins, and often when you see that doe come fall, she has a buck fawn and a doe fawn. And that's what is, those are called free martens. And what the scientists believe is that in utero, the testosterone from that male fetus affects the female fetus. Does it make it infertile? This is just me guessing from based on what I know. I don't believe so, but we know that happens in cattle a lot, that it will become that female counterpart will be infertile. In deer, they're guessing that there could be, if you're seeing, and I wouldn't even say a preponderance, because like if you're seeing more than one antler doe in your life in an area, they're thinking that maybe some of these are actually free martens, that something is going on, that it's getting some kind of testosterone, acquiring some kind of testosterone level when it is the twin of a male counterpart. In cattle, this gets really, like I said, back in science class, the animal will originate as a female, double X, acquires the male XY component in utero by exchange of some cellular material from the male twin via vascular connections between the placentas, which, again, blows my mind. You know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. This is one of those ways. In that placenta, somehow, you know, some kind of material is being transferred from one to the other, and that's why that deer is an individual and unique, way beyond my comprehension. In most cattle twins, the blood vessels in the chorions become interconnected, creating a shared circulation for both twins. If both fetuses are the same sex, it's of no significance. But if they are different, the male hormones pass from the male twin to the female twin, and the male hormones, mostly testosterone, then masculinize in that female twin, and the result is what they call a free Martin. So they believe that same thing can happen in ungulates, especially whitetails. Like in elk and moose, you're probably not seeing that because you're normally only seeing single calves in those births. So they also know in cattle that free Martins behave and grow in a similar way that castrated male calves or steers behave. So to me, the more that I learned about this over the years, remember when we did stories, and you might even know, like when you see what you call non-participants during the rut, there might be something to that. We don't know. And I think more research is needed in that area. And then finally, to wrap this all up in a nice, neat little package, we get to that fourth category, which is the one everybody always wants to call it, true antler does. Okay, so what is a true antler doe? You had to wait for me for 22 minutes to explain that. According to Ozoga, a true antler doe has been described as having velvet-covered pedicles only. So if you look at the pedicle, okay, so if you guys are actually watching the video version of this, if you're watching the pedicle, that's where this attaches to. That will be covered in velvet. And that velvet, from the very low testosterone levels in that animal, just kind of, it's almost like a lava coming out of a volcano. It just kind of covers that pedicle, builds. And you might get these weird little looking, what we call antlers. Velvet-covered spikes with an occasional branching. You might see a little occasional branching taking place. Occasional, very rare, of a hard polished antler, but that's extraordinarily rare. Normally, if you see that hard polish of, because there's not enough testosterone to cast that antler, if it is a true female, if you do see that polish, you have to think, now you got to go back and think, nope, this is a male, some type of hermaphrodite. And the European researchers, which would be the Bubinex primarily, they found that the size and characteristics of doe antlers differed depending on the condition of the deer's reproductive tract, which is very fascinating. So, like, if you have a true antler doe, if she was super healthy or diseased or degenerated, would determine the size of those, what we're calling antlers, on that true antler doe. Classically, a doe carrying hardened, polished antlers will imply reproductive problems. And in most circumstances, mature antlers would be indicative, as I said, of a hermaphrodite, a pseudohermaphrodite, or some other type of anomaly, which calls into play the question about free martens. So that is my rant. I know it gets a little bit heady and a little bit involved, and I do have to refer to my notes on this anytime I talk about it, because this is true science. This isn't just me sitting on a bar stool making stuff up. And that's one thing that I would always encourage you as a whitetail enthusiast. When you're talking about something, you don't have to be a know-it-all. But if you do know some history behind all these great people who studied this for us, it really helps all of us better not only educate future generations, but learn more about this deer that is, let's face it, it's America's number one game animal. So that's today's program. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to watch or listen to any of these programs, you know where you're watching it. You know where you're listening to it. Subscribe, like, share, and we bring you a brand new one every single week. For everyone here at Deer and Deer Hunting, thank you for your time. I am Dan Schmidt, and until next time, enjoy the outdoors and keep watching Deer Talk Now. This episode is brought to you by Drop Tine Spirits and their premium 12-point bourbon whiskey. The story of Drop Tine's finest bourbon starts with being double barrel aged. What this means is they first age the bourbon in new charred oak barrels in America's heartland, then send it to California to be finished in the salt air of the Pacific in the finest brandy barrels. Finishing their bourbon in brandy barrels was the choice of many trials to find flavors as unique as the Drop Tine deer. They wanted a bourbon that is not only warm to the palate, but it would sip smoothly and leave notes of fruit behind. They found the perfect brandy barrels in the Russian River Valley near Sonoma, California, and what they created is a bourbon whiskey that exhibits a sweet, floral, almost honey-like aroma balanced by caramel, toasted wood, brown sugar, and toffee. 12 Point Bourbon is only available online. To get a taste for yourself after the hunt, visit droptine.com. Deer Talk Now is also brought to you by Hunt Stand and the new Hunt Stand Pro app. Let me tell you, I've been using the Hunt Stand app for a couple seasons now, and I can honestly say it has changed the way I hunt. There's no more guessing on wind direction, property lines, and stand locations. The app takes my hunting to precise new levels that help me be more successful. The new Hunt Stand Pro app unlocks unlimited property data on a nationwide basis, including detailed property boundaries throughout the United States and most of Canada, including property owners' names in the United States, with detailed ownership information. You can also access detailed public land maps and search for properties on a county, state, or province level. There are so many features that also help you dial in on the best spots based on weather conditions. For more information, visit the App Store or log on to huntstand.com. This podcast is brought to you by Cuddyback Cameras. I'm going to tell you guys, I've known Mark Cuddyback personally for over 20 years, and I've been using those cameras for over 18 years on Deer and Deer Hunting TV. The recent technology in the past few years has absolutely blown me away, and for those of you who don't have great cell coverage where you hunt, Cuddyback's ability to daisy chain from one camera to another camera with new CuddyLink technology is an absolute lifesaver. With the ability to connect 24 cameras, I place one home base camera at the edge of my property, swap that card out just once a month, and I get a look at all the activity on my entire property. My deer stay unpressured, and the conditions are prime for opening day of bow season. For those of you who have the luxury of cell service, check out their new Cuddyback Trax technology. This is game changing. For more information, go to Cuddyback.com. Deer Talk is also brought to you by Traditions Firearms, a family-owned business and inventor of the new Nitro Fire muzzleloader. When owner and president Tom Hall and his daughter Allison first showed me the Nitro Fire system, I was immediately impressed that it is not only more convenient than conventional muzzleloaders, but it is safer. The ability to quickly remove the powder charge is a big deal, such as when crossing a fence, climbing into or out of a tree stand, transporting your rifle in a truck or an ATV, or when hiking rough hills, wading creeks, or plunging through swamps. I've used the NitroFire on numerous deer and deer hunting TV hunts over the past 2 years, and I find it safe, accurate, and very dependable. The gun is available in numerous configurations. To learn more, visit traditionsfirearms.com. The Deer Talk Now podcast is also brought to you by Apex Outdoor Rewards. Hit record and win rewards. Enter the Apex Whitetail Challenge in your state for your opportunity to win big cash. Enter today and get a 4K camera absolutely free. That's a $300 value absolutely free. There are some serious rewards here, guys, so be sure to enter in your state. Who would have thought your next buck could be putting money in your pocket? Reserve your spot today at apexoutdoorrewards.com. The Deer Talk Now podcast is also brought to you by Full Range Mounting Systems. These mounting systems are a great way to manage all of your mounts in a stylish and organized manner. We are using their pedestal mount here on the podcast set for two shoulder mounts, and it looks just awesome. Be sure to check out all their mounting solutions at fullrangesystems.com. And finally, Deer Talk Now is brought to you by 10 Point Crossbow Technologies. Hey, if you've watched me on Deer and Deer Hunting TV, you know that I'm an equal opportunity bow hunter, and for most of the past decade, that has also included crossbows. In fact, I shot my first crossbow deer with a 10 point over 12 years ago, and to say that I've been impressed with their technology is an understatement. This year, I'm shooting the new Nitro 505, the fastest crossbow in the world. It is light, compact, and includes the revolutionary AccuSlide cocking and decocking technology. Whether I'm in a tree stand, ground blind, or spot and stalk hunting, I know the Nitro 505 is up to any challenge. Check one out at a dealer near you or log on to 10pointcrossbows.com for more information.
Matt!
Okay, we're going to take a quick break to thank one of our sponsors. Today's episode of Deer Talk Now podcast is brought to you by Muddy Outdoors and the new Merge Cellular Trail Camera. Featuring simple, easy-to-use cellular activation with quick-scan QR setup, the Merge Cell Cam features 26 megapixels, updated ultra-fast trigger speeds, 4 image resolutions, 80-foot detection and IR range, burst mode, and an SD card slot that takes up to 32 gigabyte cards. It operates on 8 AA batteries and has an external power jack for solar battery pack that's sold separately. Check them out at your local sporting goods retailer or visit GoMuddy.com.